And a call to order the Transportation Finance Committee meeting and for March 14th, 2006. I believe we do have a quorum. Thank you, members, for being on time. The first item on agenda is Ms. Lott will note the roll. In addition, we need to move the minutes of the March 2nd meeting. Representative Anderson moves the minutes. Are there any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. The next item on the agenda is today we will hear about the governor's bonding recommendations, and we also will hear from Representative Dempsey and Representative Seifert. Representative Dempsey will present some additional information about port needs, and Representative Seifert will present some additional information about rail needs. According to the schedule that I've been given, Mr. Selmis is first up for MnDOT. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, my name is Cecil Selmis. I'm the Director of the Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations for the Minnesota Department of Transportation.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, ma'am. You'd like a brief update on the port improvement programs and the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program?
Yes, the money that we gave you last year, what did you do with it, and what are you requesting for this year?
The funding for the Rail Service Improvement Program last year was $2.5 million. $1 million of those dollars were allocated to the city of New Brighton for a new Y. They are in the process of acquiring the property necessary to build that Y and to also make contracts with the railroads who will be operating over it. They expect the project to start in the fall of 2006. The remaining $1,500,000 that was made available will be used by the Rail Service Improvement Program for capital improvement loans. We solicit those loans on a regular basis. We expect to have applications made in April and then again in June, and our expectation is that we'll have between $1 million and $1.4 million of loans through that application process.
And the balance on that account currently of unexpended funds?
The balance, this is a revolving program, and so we have with the $2.5 million, if you give me a second here. We will have $6.3 million total in the account.
And then how much do you plan to loan out in this round of application?
$1 to $1.4 million through the rest of this fiscal year, we'll be making loans of about $2 to $2.5 million.
And then why do you keep such a large balance?
The revenues that we take in come back on a basis of the grants that we make, and so those are funds that come back to us. And then we program those, and we accept applications. So from time to time, that balance will go up and go down. And at the present time, I think we'll be seeing over $2 million in the balance. One of the things that we've done to control this program is to limit the amount of capital improvement loans that we make to $200,000 per improvement. As projects have been growing in the size and cost, one of the options that we may consider is allowing a larger cap on those projects.
And then is there a request this year for additional money?
The governor has no request for this program in his budget.
All right. Are there any additional questions for Mr. Selmis on the rail program? Seeing none, if you want to go on to the ports.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
The port improvement program was provided to and a half million dollars, I believe. And those projects have been developed with the Duluth Port Authority, the St. Paul Port Authority, and the Winona Port Authority. Excuse me, it's $2 million. dollars. The Duluth Port Authority will be using $300,000 for their gantry cranes to do some work on those. St. Paul Port Authority will be re-roofing one of their warehouses and rebuilding some railroad track crossings within their property. And the Winona Port Authority will be completing a harbor dredging project. All of these projects are under the contracting process and will are estimated to be completed this summer through early next year, 2006.
All right. Are there any questions on 2005 appropriations? They're delineated in this handout here that you've been given on the bottom of the first page. And then the governor's request for this year's bonding program?
The governor has made no request for this program.
All right. And is there any fund balance at this time in that program?
Madam Chair, there is not. All money has been allocated.
All right, thank you. And then if I might, have you had the opportunity to review Representative Seifert's bill, House File 2906?
Yes, ma'am.
And would the projects that he is asking to fund in that bill, would they be eligible for the rail improvement funding?
This bill requests a grant for this project. The Rail Service Improvement Program is essentially a loan program which requires both railroad and rail shipper participation along with the state participation. So the way this bill is drafted would not fit within the Rail Service Improvement
Program. But would the project itself, the things that they want to do to the rail line, would they qualify?
Madam Chair,
if they were willing to take a loan?
The kinds of work that is envisioned is within the acceptable parameters of the program.
All right, thank you. Are there any additional questions for Mr. Salmas at this time? Seeing none, we'll have Representative Dempsey. If you'd like to come to the stand and present the needs for the port projects in the state of Minnesota, please. And members, we've included Representative Dempsey's bill in your packet. We're not actually hearing the bill, but he asked for the opportunity to come speak to us about the needs for port funding in Minnesota this year. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you'd like to state your name for the record, maybe Ms. Representative Dempsey would like to start. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Jerry Dempsey, state representative, and I'd like to have the other two gentlemen, if they want to do it at this time, mention their names and what their relationship in regard to this piece of legislation is.
Certainly.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Myron White. I work with the Red Wing Port Authority.
Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chairman, my name is Dick Lambert. I'm the Director of Ports and Waterways for MnDOT, and I administer the Port Development Assistance Program.
Great. Thanks for coming. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, the bill that you have before you is House File 2682. And it's an allocation of bond proceeds to recapitalize the port authorities in the various cities of the state of Minnesota. Duluth is one of those cities. Minneapolis is one of those cities. St. Paul, Winona, Red Wing. I think that's it. All on the on ports which deliver commodities from and to the state of Minnesota. That's what makes this particular piece of legislation so vitally important, simply because of the fact that continued use of that, there is an increase in commodities being shipped in both from Minnesota and to other countries around the world. And to put it bluntly, that brings forth jobs. And there are a few things in life that people have the best things about them. And one of those is nobody wants to lose their job. Legislators don't. No way. I'm going to keep that job going and going and going. Well, that's what this particular piece of legislation does. One unique thing about the Port Authority, members, it solves a problem. We had it one time in Minnesota. You probably don't remember that, but I do, and I'm a little off the track now, but just wanted to share it with you. And that is we lowered the drinking age from 21 to 18. It goofed it up. But we allowed 18 years old to drink, and they were doing it in the public schools. And this was the part of the body that, not that you were here, but I was in school administration then. This piece of legislation creates a situation where we solve a problem. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is worthwhile, and that's why I think I believe in the port authorities that do a great job in seeing that commodities are shipped to various countries in the world and in the United States. I have with the two people. One is from the state of Minnesota, and the other one is Myron White, who is the Port Authority CEO, so to speak, and also Mr. Dick Lambert, who will answer any questions that maybe you have. So at this time, I'd like to turn the program over to Mr. White.
Thank you very much, Representative Dempsey. Welcome to the committee, Mr. White.
Thank you. Today, my testimony really will focus on the kind of the critical importance that the Port Development Assistance Program has had on really the movement of bulk commodities in Minnesota. If you think of the types of commodities that we move through these ports in Minnesota, we really affect the entire state economy. You ask anybody involved in agriculture, and they know the role that the port authorities play in moving these bulk commodities, both into and out of the state of Minnesota. The Redmond Port Authority, with their program, when we utilized the Port Development Assistance Program, we made a really exciting project in Redmond. We were actually able to move our bulk transfer facility, our bulkhead facility, out of an area adjacent to our downtown. If you've been through Red Wing, you know Highway 61 is essentially the main street of the city of Red Wing. And when we had our bulk transfer facility adjacent to our downtown, we essentially had 15,000 trucks going back and forth through Red Wing every summer, starting in April and going through October. So we were able to, with the help of the Port Development Assistance Program, physically relocate the bulkhead facility to the south part of the town, adjacent or very close to our primary customer that uses our bulkhead. Again, by using that, we basically eliminated those 15,000 truck trips down Highway 61 and down Main Street of Red Wing. So not only did it make our transshipment of cargo much more efficient than it was, but also had a huge safety, also resolved a huge safety issue in the community, and that had been with the community for 20, 30 years. And it resolved a long-standing issue in Red Wing, and it's been a wonderful project for us. The operator of the bulk transfer facility raves how much better and more efficient the facility is. The end users of the facility get better service from that facility, and that project wouldn't have taken place without the Port Development Assistance Program. The St. Paul Port Authority and the Duluth Seaway Port Authority have also made significant improvements as a result of that program. They've rehabilitated warehouse roofs, repaired several areas of dock walls, dredged barge fleeting areas, upgraded a mooring site, and basically addressed the transportation needs. If you think of port authorities, many of these facilities are 50, 60, 70 years old and have long been neglected, and it's time to make some reinvestment and to revitalize those facilities. The Port of Winona was able to remove a sunken barge, which was disrupting their river traffic in Winona. They also are replacing barge mooring facilities, constructing a new mooring cell, and rehabilitating their commercial dock wall. Again, very little of this work could have been done without the Port Development Assistance Program. I think you've seen we've got a backlog of projects for the next several years, and I think we've got some great projects. So I was driving home the other night, I was thinking, bang for the buck. I think the Port Development Assistance Program really gives you significant bang for the transportation dollars. I thank Representative Dempsey and those of you on the committee and the bonding committee that supported the Port Development Assistance Program over the years. And we respectfully request that you continue that support in the future. Retired Duluth Port Director Davis Halberg, I think, wrapped it up pretty well in his statement. He says, waterborne commerce uses less energy, causes less environmental degradation, generates less waste disposal, is responsible for fewer accidents, and creates the least societal disruption. And for good measure, it's almost always cheaper. Really, you know, the port and the waterborne commerce essentially removes tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of trucks off Minnesota roadways. We calculate one barge that comes and is offloaded at the Port Authority is 60 trucks that's not on Minnesota roads. So it makes a significant impact on truck traffic on Minnesota roads. This recapitalization request is also supported by the Minnesota Soybean Growers, the Upper Mississippi Waterways Association, Minnesota Association of Wheat Growers, and the Transportation Alliance. So you can see the heavy agriculture. They recognize the need for updated port facilities in Minnesota. Again, thank you for your support, and I'll be happy to answer any questions people might have.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lambert, did you have anything you'd like to add to that testimony?
Well, Madam Chairman, not particularly. Just the one thing that we're facing is freight transportation. All the projections that you hear all over the country are increasing, also in the state of Minnesota as well as the rest of the world, the rest of the United States. And we're having projections of 60 to 80% increase in freight transportation in the next 15, 20 years. And if you're going to handle that all on our roadways, that's going to be quite a burden. And by having a waterway transportation system, both on the Mississippi River and the Great Lakes, to take some of that burden off the highway system is going to be probably a welcome change for Minnesota.
All right, thank you. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just curious, if you put more axles under those barges, could you carry more stuff?
Mr. Lambert?
Madam Chairman, Representative, we try to keep the axles on the roadways and not on the waterways.
Okay.
As Myron said, for each barge that's operating in the river, it takes the place of 60 trucks, takes the place of 15 railroad cars. So you put a tow together on the Mississippi River, 15 barges. That's 800-900 truckloads and an awful lot of railroad cars. And most of our problem we're looking at in Minnesota is trying to relieve that highway congestion problem. And by getting more of that product on rail and both on waterways is going to help our problem, so that the family driving down the highway is not going to have more trucks to deal with. We're not trying to eliminate trucks. There's no way that the truck is needed to get the product to the final destination, mm-hmm. and it's also needed to take the product agriculturally from the field to the depot. But it's that long haul where you're running from one end of the state to the other with trucks that you're trying to slow down that growth.
Any additional questions? Seeing none, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Representative Seifert. Welcome to the committee. And members, we've included House File 2906 for illustrative purposes as far as needs for rail development in the state of Minnesota. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I have with me today Mr. Bob Fox, who's a Ramsdale County Commissioner, Mr. Bruce Tinsky from the Arlington area. Basically, what this bill does is Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority has quite a bit of debt incurred from previous loan applications that they've had in upgrading the track that runs from Norwood, Young America to Hanley Falls, Minnesota. It touches through a tiny piece of my district, basically the north edge of my district. It really has consequences across the entire corridor of over half a dozen legislative districts. And I think illustrative of the need for looking at ways to get some of the large trucks off the road and saving some of our roads from the damage that they're incurring. We're expecting to have more traffic in this area, and more because of output at the ethanol plant in Winthrop is going up because of the demand for ethanol is increasing so much. There were some studies that were done finding that in saving the Minnesota Prairie Line with the amount of miles and product shipped out, $2.2 million in direct benefits or $5.5 million in the last 3 years. The grant that is being requested, I know it's a blank request right now, I believe it was $4 million to upgrade the 33 miles of track running from Gibbon Norwood Young America. Not my district, but certainly I think important for the entire region of running from the edge of the metro area all the way out to western Minnesota for shipment of corn. There's actually a gasification plant they're talking about in Redwood Falls that would actually gasify garbage from the metro area, so it works a little different than incineration, but they'll be able to harness the energy for the Farmers Union plant in Redwood Falls that processes dead animals into dog food and so forth, that they'll be able to harness the energy, that the byproduct would be able to use renewable energy, but the garbage in my area is probably not enough to sustain the plant, and we'd probably, instead of landfilling all of this, be able to bring garbage from the metro area out, gasify it, use the alternative energy sources, and get onto the grid out there. It's a very exciting process. There's no government money being requested in terms of this project, but in order to get that garbage from the metro area out, there's been discussion about using this rail line. You know, get a lot of these trucks and semis and potential garbage haulers to be able to use this rail line. So I'm going to stop there and turn it over to Bruce Pinsky, who has some brief remarks, and then we can stand for any questions.
All right, thank you. Welcome to the committee. Just state your name for the record.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Bruce Pinsky. I'm the chairman of the Regional Rail Authority, president of the Shippers Association along the line, and I'm the manager at Seneca Foods in Arlington, Minnesota. The authority is a government entity that runs through five counties. The line is solely owned by the authority. The counties are Carver, Sibley, Renville, Redwood, and Yellow Medicine. In 2001, we obtained a loan from the state of Minnesota, similar to the loan you talked about earlier, Madam Chair, where shippers have to contribute and the authority contributes. And at this point, our funds were tapped out to go to another loan there. We don't have the resources to make those matching contributions. That's why we're asking for a grant. The line was completely down when we started this program, and in the year 2003 we were able to get the line rehabilitated and get some trains running. In those 3 years we've seen benefits of $5.5 million. Now these are benefits that are to the shippers for dollar savings by competitive pricing above about 40%. 60% of the benefits are actually benefits based on road savings, and that is from studies from the University of Iowa and Kansas on how much per ton mile it costs to run that kind of weight across highways. So that's what those benefits are. This summer we will have completed three phases of the five-phase project that we are undertaking. And this money gets us into four and five, where we'll get heavier rail cars and we can increase the speed so we can turn cars quicker. The main reason for this right now is the ethanol plant, which projects 5,000 to 6,000 cars upon its completion a year, and that is scheduled for November, and I'm told they're actually a little ahead of schedule, which is not usual, but so that's the need for this heavier rail. Right now we can't handle those size cars, and they need to move their product. And every rail car is approximately 3-4 trucks, so you have some kind of belief on how that works with ton miles. So we believe this is a win-win situation for all parties. We also believe this is a project that will continue to show rewards and certainly an endeavor that delivers on money investment. And we ask for support of this bill. And now I'm going to turn it over to Commissioner Bob Fox, and he'll talk a little bit about ethanol.
Welcome to the committee, Commissioner. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bob Fox, Renville County Commissioner and past president of the Minnesota Corn Growers. It's a privilege to be back here today. 11 years ago, I was here with a group of farmers trying to help the Minnesota model be developed and gain support for our farmer-owned cooperatives. Today, I'm here to help the ethanol industry again to move forward, and by doing so, to help our Minnesota economy and our environment. 11 days ago, I was fortunate enough to hear Governor Polinyi address the Commodity Classic, which is a national trade meeting of the National Corn Growers and American Soybean Association. The governor told farmers and ag business people throughout the country how Minnesota will lead the way in biofuels. Later that day, I heard a discussion on the implementation of the federal renewable standards that was passed in 2005. This standard of 7.5 billion gallons of ethanol in the United States by 2012. This will probably be met by 2008 or 2009. But one of the most interesting comments came from a Jim Redding from Avatine Renewable Energy when he said that the next step for Midwest will be able to move the renewable products by rail to different parts of the United States. We'll need a railroad that can move products and be able to put large trains of renewable products together. So we'll be able to shift where the market is, be able to turn the cars in order to keep efficient. The key for Midwest and Minnesota is able to serve both the East and West Coast. We are fortunate that the NPL Short Line is one of those railroads, and we can do just that. We can ship both East and West. With the addition that's going on at Heartland Plant in Winthrop, we'll be able to move the renewable fuels from Minnesota to all parts of the United States with the help that you can give us with our request for the bonding bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of these gentlemen? Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'm just wondering, is this a special, like a local bill? Because we normally fund the Railroad Improvement Act. Is this something that was not approved by them? Somebody coming in and decide, like we get a lot of local bills, and is that the case here or not?
Representative Leader, this particular, we don't officially have the bill in front of us. I'm not hearing the bill. I told Representative Seifert that he could come forward to illustrate some of the needs in the rail service project. His bill actually is asking for general fund bonding grant, if you will, not participating in the loan program. In talking to the advocates from this project, I also suggested that they go talk to the ag and environment people and the jobs people, given the ethanol component of this and some of the components of the project that we've heard about the what did you say, gasification, et cetera. So we're bringing this forward today to illustrate for this committee some of the railroad needs. We're going to do the worksheet process for bonding recommendations next week, and if people want to put this on the worksheet, they certainly can. But it would not be, they're not asking to be under the loan program, if you will. But it's an illustration of some of the real needs in the state.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was my concern, because if they aren't, could we, and I think this is really a viable, good thing, but I'm wondering if we don't open the door here by everybody coming in, projects outside, if they didn't get approved by the Rail Improvement Authority and coming in with local bills, and then we got a real problem.
And certainly that is a problem, and I think Mr. Apetz would like to address the committee. Maybe he can help with this question as well. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Apetz. I'm with the law firm of Messerly and Kramer, and our firm represents the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association, which is the association that is made up of the 23 short line and regional railroads that run in the state of Minnesota. Short line railroads are essentially the pieces of the large railroads that were abandoned years ago. And we have several of them, 23 as I said, and probably four or five major ones here in the state. What Representative Leader is referring to, Madam Chairman, is the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program. The acronym is MRSI, and we kind of enjoy that acronym. The MRSI program is celebrating its 30th year in existence. It came into existence by virtue of legislative approval in 1976, and over that time has provided loans to railroads in conjunction with, loans to rail projects, which are made up of the state contribution, the railroad contribution, and a contribution from shippers, which are loans that are paid back to the state. It's been a revolving fund. It's kind of processed through about $175 million of improvements on the $35 million that the state has made in investments. To Representative Leader's question, though, it is
today a loan program. It is exclusively that, unlike the Port Authority program, which allows, which provides for grants. And one of the reasons that is typically a lot of this goes to private enterprise, private businesses, railroads, as well as the shippers along the line. This is a unique situation, and the unique situation here involves a regional rail authority, involves a local unit of government. Unfortunately, unlike the Port Authority program, there is no sort of provision made for grants, and so they need to come here and ask, as a local unit of government, for a grant. Madam Chair, I don't necessarily disagree with Representative Leader, however, in that the Mercy program, if we broaden the authorities, to what it can statutorily do, but let's just state that the Commissioner can make grants, like we do in the Port Authority program, to political subdivisions. That may solve this problem and keep everything under the aegis of the state's analysis as well. I suggest do it like the Port Authority program. Allow the state, the Commissioner, to make two political subdivisions, grants of up to 80% of the cost for the facilities. I'm not talking about cars and engines and things like that right now. I'm talking about rail and ballast and the rest of it. It's an option that I was thinking of after speaking with the chairman, the chairperson, the other day, and it might be a way to address all the needs of these folks as well as your concerns as well, and the needs of the regional railroads in this state.
All right. Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Abbott, sir, the author of the bill, the $4 million that's being requested here for as a grant to help in upgrading the regional rail authority there, will that do a major fix on the problem, or is that just a small?
It's approximately 30 miles that we're looking at increasing the heavier rail. See, the ballast was done in the first rehab. There's a little bit there, not much. It'll be mostly heavier rail to get past the ethanol plant, which takes that larger cars to the east end. It will not take it to the west end at this point because it's a 94.4-mile track. So we're looking at approximately a third of this to get to the plant so we can get most of the product out of there, which will actually head toward the East Coast. There's going to be the majority of it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Abrams.
Madam Chair, I understand the federal match. What sort of local match is going to be here?
Mr. Pinsky.
Local match.
Is the local government taking
it? No. There's no local match.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair.
Mr. Abbott.
I apologize. Madam Chair. Representative Abrams, there will be some additional, I think it's about $800,000 put into the project by the facility, by the Winthrop Ethanol facility, to build sidetrack and improve their yard so they can move more cars onto the regional line, if you will. So there's some private investment as well.
Any additional questions for these gentlemen? Seeing none, thank you very much, Representative Seifert. Thanks for coming down today. All right. The next item that we have in front of us is the Capital Improvement Projects Overview. Mr. Gray from MnDOT. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, my name is Kevin Gray, Chief Financial Officer for MnDOT, and I'm going to be giving both an overview of our 2005 appropriations and the Governor's request for 2006. And you should have in your packets a handout that has this presentation, dual slide. In addition, we've also passed out the spreadsheet previously referenced by the Chair. It gives some more detail as to the who's and why's and what's, and we'll refer to that as well. Very briefly, last year there were seven projects that would fall in the transportation realm of capital appropriations. Two of them relate to our local partners, the cities, counties, and townships, the local bridge replacement program and the local road improvement program for $40 and $10 million respectively. You heard from Mr. Selnis regarding the Port Development Rail Service Improvement Program, and I'll briefly refer to that as well. Mr. Selnis originally was going to just talk to the program in advance of the two bills from Representatives Dempsey and Seifert, so we'll double up on that a little bit, but I'll give you some additional information. My understanding is the North Star project, which was also one of the projects approved last year, will be covered separately in a separate agenda item for the committee, so I will not be addressing that today other than to refer to it as part of the total transportation capital appropriations. In addition, we had two local projects, the Duluth Lift Bridge for $1 million and the St. Paul Holman Field Dike, which was a MAC request for $1 million. Looking first at local bridges, we requested $40 million. And by the way, we do have people from our state aid office here to talk to it in more detail. And I also have two handouts that provide a complete list of the projects for this program as well as the local road improvement program that I will distribute after my presentation for your reference going forward. But briefly, at a high level, from a timely standpoint, the funds are already committed, the full $40 million. I think Mr. Jonas from the state aid office would say it was a matter of weeks that this money was targeted and established for a number of projects. There are some 96 projects that received funding in fiscal 2005 and commitments in geographic terms over 47 counties, but these are both county, township, and city bridges. Median price of these bridges, and you can get a kind of sense of the scale or perspective, is that half these projects were over $147,000 and half were under $147,000 in costs. The largest individual contribution was the Stock Rapids Bridge, which was talked about quite a bit the past two sessions, actually, and that's at $15 million. That project has been let and is underway. The smallest contribution, just to give you a sense of the other extreme, was just $8,000 for a project in Yellow Mountain County. I think an interesting point to note that the state aid folks would talk to you about is that in addition to the $40 million, this leveraged another $37 million of state aid monies and federal monies to build these projects. So it's a very efficient program for us. Going next to the capital appropriation for local roads, $10 million was established for this. And this is the, I believe, what I would call a pilot program. In effect, it's the first time that we've provided monies for grants for the local road program. There are three sub-accounts to that, and this $10 million was dedicated in equal parts $5 million to rural road safety, which is a newly established sub-account, as well as $5 million to roads of regional significance. There were 110 applications for this money, so it was very popular with our local partners, of which 40 grants were made, totaling the $10 million. And you can see below that 26 projects went to rural road safety and 14 to roads of regional significance. So again, that money is fully committed and projects underway. We spoke briefly to the Port Development Program already. Appropriation from the legislature last year was $2 million. Again, those funds just reinforced Mr. Selnis' testimony that are fully committed and were split between the Duluth, St. Paul, and Winona ports. Again, another side note that this investment leveraged an additional $550,000 of local investment to augment or complement the state investment. With respect to the Rail Service Improvement Program, there was actually a $2.5 million total appropriation. $1.5 million of that went to the Rail Service Improvement Program. Again, that was discussed, and that is primarily a loan program for our local shippers and providers. The $1 million for the New Brighton Rail Y, and if anybody asks me what a Y is, I'll have to call somebody up, but that's a $1 million grant. So there is that was specified by the legislature to be a grant. We are, as Mr. Selnis referenced, we are taking soliciting projects underway. We currently anticipate the applications being reviewed and received from shippers by June of 2006. And the local New Brighton city is looking at to encumber the local, identify local portion of the project funds for the Y, but they are expected to get that started and completed this fall. With respect to the two local projects, just a quick update, the Duluth Lift Bridge, the Aerial Lift Bridge, and Holman Field projects were both allocated $1 million, and in both cases they're awaiting actions by the local authorities, the City of Duluth, and the Metropolitan Airports Commission in conjunction with the City of St. Paul. So that's what I know about those at this point in time. If there are any questions regarding the status of the 2005 appropriations, I'd like to take them now.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Gray? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Gray, back under your capital appropriation for local roads, $10 million, you've broken it down into rural road safety and roads of regional significance. What major criteria was used in deciding who the awards were going to be let to?
Mr. Gray.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm going to let Rick Jonas from our State Aid Office talk to the specific criteria. I will say that they have set up a local steering committee that makes all the decisions on behalf of the counties and cities and townships, and they have a process that's very firm in identifying and soliciting the applications and making the decisions. But I'll turn this over to Mr. Jonas at this point.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Jonas. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Rick Jonas. I work for MnDOT's Division of State Aid. And if I heard the question correctly, it was how did we determine the money in the local road improvement program? What was the criteria used for the 110 applications? There is a steering committee set up of local officials, two from the cities and three from the counties that we work with. And in the regional significance account, the term regional significance is fairly broadly described. But it is targeted money of regional benefit, and we ask them specifically to show some benefit to business or tourism or economic development in the area and show letters of support. And in the House here in particular last year, the discussion and the debate surrounding funding this bill was deliverability. So we made sure that that was built into the application. We used more or less the same criteria in the safety program. That the bill did require that one-third of the money was spent in the metro area and two-thirds in the rural area. We had fewer applications in that program, and most of the applications for the safety program were, in fact, funded.
Madam Chair,
I'm Mr. Gray.
I'm Page's delivery list right now of the both the safety program and regional significant projects. There's a front and back page that you're receiving right now, and they're labeled, and it'll show the specific location and dollar amount of the projects that Mr. Jonas was referencing.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Jonas, would you say that you mentioned deliverability, would you say that would probably be the key component to deciding who was to get the bill or not, get these awards?
Mr. Jonas.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, deliverability was a major factor. As soon as the money became available to our office, we put applications out and asked them within 2 weeks for applications to be returned, and the decisions were made within a week or two after that. And yes, many other good applications that we knew were out there could not meet the aggressive timeline.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gray, I have a question. Why has your presentation neglected the administration's request for trunk highway funding for the exterior of the MnDOT building? And I believe that request is trunk highway funds and would fall under this committee.
Madam Chair, that is a Department of Administration request, and it has been routed to, I believe, the local government committee. or Representative Seifert heard the bill a couple of days ago. It's a good point, and I did want to acknowledge that. In fact, that leads me to the last, if I might, leads me to the last slide in our presentation. And I will reference that in my narrative at least, because as the chair has noted, members, in addition to the projects we see here on governor's recommendations for the Department of Transportation, there's an additional request by Department Administration for approximately $10 million to repair the facade of the transportation building across the street. And the issue there is more of a safety emergency variety, in the sense that the slabs and the mountings that they are on, are the mountings are corroding. It's causing the slabs to shift, the granite slabs. My understanding is they're approximately 1,200 pounds, and if they shift too much and fall off, that would be a serious problem, to say the least. So since the building is a trunk highway building, by usage, it is a trunk highway bond. And nonetheless, the Department of Administration has been taking the lead on that particular request. With that, if I might, I'd like to overview the governor's recommendations for this cycle.
Great. If I could you make sure that all the committee members get a descriptive document of that project? I feel like trunk highway funding does fall under this committee, and for it not to be included in your packet today, I think at the very least the committee should get the basic information on that, because we will be filling out worksheets as far as where we want to spend our money. One of the funding pots that will be available to the committee members is trunk highway bonding, and I'm sure that Representative Dorman would appreciate some kind of recommendation of expenditure in our recommendations if we would or would not support the use of trunk highway bonding for the MnDOT building.
Madam Chair, that's very doable, and we'll get that to you, if not today, by tomorrow. With respect to the MnDOT-sponsored projects, there are five projects this year. Again, you'll see the local bridge replacement and local road improvement accounts. Those are funded with general fund-backed bonds, as is the North Star project, which is the second major request, totaling $60 million for the balance of the project. All three of those are general fund-backed projects. The two trunk highway-backed projects are trunk highway fund bond-requested projects are the Mankato District Headquarters, which has been appearing before the committee since, actually in 2000, when we first approved some funding for the purchase of right-of-way, or for the site, if you will. And has been in both the 2002-04 and now 6 appropriation requests, and then the Chaska truck station. Given that we've talked quite a bit about local bridge and local road, I do have our director, facilities director here, that we could talk at more length a bit about the Mankato District Headquarters and the Chaska truck station. But as Mr. Post comes to the table, I would like to just give a little background on the trunk highway portion of this request. Again, it's the Mankato and Chaska requests, and point out that it has been the last major capital appropriation to the Department of Transportation for building infrastructure was in 2000 in the bonding bill then. For a lot of reasons, trunk highway bonds were not authorized for building projects, for building infrastructure, in 2002, 2004, or 2005. Historically, we have looked at between $20 and $25 million as our target to ensure that we're meeting replacement cycles and major improvements to our buildings throughout the state, and then Mr. Post will talk to that briefly. So we've got some pent-up demand, is my point, and we've tried to take the highest priority projects and keep that level to a manageable level. But so we have approximately $25 million in trunk highway bond-backed general obligation bonds, and approximately $100 million in the governor's recommendations of general fund-backed bonds. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Post to talk briefly about the Mankato District Headquarters and the Chaska Trust Station.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Post. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dick Post. I'm the Facilities Program Director for the Department of Transportation. The Mankato District 7 headquarters is an approximately 163,000 square foot construction of a new district headquarters, which will cost, the request is for approximately $18,200,000. This facility will support approximately 78 snowplows for that area of District 7 that they take care of the roads on. It supports staff locker rooms, office spaces, vehicle supports, mechanic spaces, workspace, inventory, chemical storage, and cold and yard storage. Our current facility is located on a 17-acre site with 2 acres set aside for drainage. It handles all of this equipment now, and we have some problems with some turning radiuses for our heavier vehicles, our larger snowplows. When this building was built in 1963, snowplow trucks were single rear axle. They were approximately 34 feet long from head to toe, and the bays inside the truck station were 14 feet by approximately, the double bay was 14 feet by 80. Current tandem snowplows now from head to toe run 39 feet, and now we've since added buying capability to the back end of the larger plows. They're even larger than that. Side plows on them require the base to now be 16 feet wide. So we're running with a building that needs to be, to cover the bays, 90 feet wide span for double loading on. It's quite a bit different. In 1963 and through the years when this district facility was used, there were 38 snow plows and other pieces of major equipment planned for. Today that number is 78. We've had some few changes that we were able to accommodate, but now we are parking snow plows everywhere. Our problem is that with the newer technologies that we've got, computers on the trucks, and the hydraulics that are required to move these massive pieces of plow and steel and so on, we need these trucks to be inside warm storage in order to get them back on the roads as soon as they're needed for snowplow removal. Other considerations for Mankato is that we save the taxpayer dollars by partnering. We are partnering with the State Highway Patrol and with the Division of Vehicle Services. They will also share this facility with us, and we will become a government center, a state government center in the city of Mankato. The city itself is highly interested in our old site. They currently are in 5 to 6 various maintenance facilities within the city of Mankato, and they're trying to consolidate, and they've approached, once we talked about rebuilding and building a new Mankato, the city was approached, and they have a high degree of interest in taking over our facility and using it for their facility, Public Works Department. In fact, the city has invested over $1 million in our new site, building curbs, water, sewer, bituminous roads, and so on to the site so that it's ready to go when we get approval to build. The last thing this facility will do is it will serve as their transportation operations communication center for south and southwestern Minnesota. That means it will coordinate and dispatch for MnDOT, for MnDOT, the State Patrol, and DNR conservation officers in this the 10 counties of south and southwestern Minnesota. Subject to your questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions on the Mankato District 7 headquarters proposal? Seeing none? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Post, what's the timeline on this once the approval is given on this as far as getting it up and running?
Mr. Post.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, the plans are at 95%. We're ready to bid. We're in the final stages of doing red line corrections. We have a final review to go, but we are ready to go as soon as the funding is approved.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Post, how long will it take to get this thing finished once you start putting the shovels in the ground and completing the work? What's the timeline for completion?
Mr. Post.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, we figure between 14 and 18 months.
Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've heard some discussion from the city of Mankato and that they have some urgency for this. I'm just wondering what happens if this project did not go forward. Would the city of Mankato go ahead with another project, or would they be willing to wait for this? Mr. Post.
Madam Chair, Representative Ruth, it's my understanding that because this project has been delayed so long, the city has recognized that they either have to build a new one for themselves, or they either have to be part of this and take over our site, or else they have to plan on building their own site later this year. Start the process.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. Any additional questions? All right. Thank you very much. Now on to the Chaska site.
Members, Chaska is it's a $6.949 million request. It's a partnership with Carver County to locate a truck station on the new portion of Highway 212 that is to be completed in 2008. This truck station is approximately 49,000 square feet and will house about 37 personnel. It will have shops and vehicle support for 24 snowplows and 25 major pieces of equipment. Of course, it contains a staff locker room, operations office space, chemical storage, cold and yard storage, as all of our truck stations do. The need is to service Highway 212 efficiently and effectively. The highway itself is has a 2008 completion date, and currently the truck station that services that area is the Shakopee truck station. As you can see by the little map on the handout that was given to you, the current Shakopee truck station is on the south side of the Minnesota River. This presents problems in that it's not an efficient location for this district's area to plow snows and maintain the roads. The existing truck station that we have in place at Shakopee has basically outgrown its need for what is become when 212 is completed and the requirements for plowing that area and maintaining that area. We also have the problem of larger equipment, the same with Shakopee's that we do at the other truck stations throughout the state. Our intent, and MnDOT's intent, is to relocate the existing Jordan truck station personnel and equipment into Shakopee. Jordan is a smaller truck station. Shakopee, therefore, could handle the equipment and that stuff when we finish the Chaska truck station. Jordan will then, at the end of this period, be turned over according to state rules to other government agencies if they want, or put on the market for sale. This realignment of one truck station on each side of the river really is better efficiency and better effectiveness for MnDOT. And it's based on our business needs. As you can see by the little plan, the new location is right smack in the middle of the plow district. The old location, again, is across the river. Some of the advantages, of course, are saving taxpayer dollars by partnering with Carver County. They will be in this facility for approximately 11 to 12% of the space. They will bond, or they will pay for their share, and the total project comes to approximately $7.7 million. We will have some efficiencies, better location scale, realignment of the maintenance areas. We'll build this to new current codes, and of course Mankato and Chaska both come under the B3 sustainability guidelines, and they both are being designed for that. Our Mankato design, as an example, which will also be used, the type of construction will be used in Chaska, has already been shown to be better than 35% more efficient and meets the B3 ratings. So we're moving right along in conjunction with what the legislature is doing for facilities. And, of course, it provides a safer and more healthy environment for our employees. And we're designing and building these truck stations now to last 45 to 50 years. We're taking advantage of the ability to remodel, to increase, rather than come back for a brand new building every time we need something that's outgrowing. We're designing them today so that we can add on and remodel and save the state some money.
Any questions about the Chaska truck station? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned in the earlier in Mankato that you have snowplows coming on with brine tanks on the back of the truck. The same thing with Chaska. Are you going to be having snowplows with brine tanks on them? Mm-hmm. And are we going more and more away from the salt, going to the brine, or what's the consensus from the DOT?
Mr. Post?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I'm an architect.
Well,
we are going, the newer trucks that we're buying have a rounded box in the back, and the brine boxes are being put on the sides. And they're being fit within this curve of the truck box and the chassis. That's good, so it's not taking up any more length. But we still have many, many, many older trucks that the brine boxes just fit on the back. And that's the only place it can be, because we have square boxes. As you're going with more and more brine, I think that's a district call. I know it is being used in more locations. We are building more brine tanks and brine capability, but anything more than that, I need to defer to one of the maintenance engineers.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Just backing up to Mankato for a minute, with the investment that the city of Mankato has made, stated on this over $900,000, if we fail to fund the district headquarters and stay on that site, does MnDOT have to pay any money back to Mankato for the investments that they've made at the state site?
Madam Chairman, I believe that's correct.
All of it, or do we, Mr. Gray, maybe you can help here?
Madam Chair, I think the expectation, if we cannot build the site there, they've made frontage road and sewer and other infrastructure improvements. So I think the expectation would be that that would be our cost at that point in time. And I think it would be a substantial amount, but somewhat short of $900,000, but probably more than half.
All right, thank you. Representative Harrison?
Just to follow up on that, why would either Mankato or the state then have proceeded?
Mr. Gray.
Madam Chair, Representative, the local district is much more informed on this, but my understanding is that as we receive permission from the legislature and an appropriation to purchase the site, that set down a path of some decisions being made. I think that there is an understanding that in the extreme that both parties are kind of operating on their own until there's a final appropriation from the legislature. But I think in the interest of time and a commitment from Mankato towards the DOT and us towards them, I think some of these decisions accelerated. And it's just been a longer gap from the discussion of purchasing the site and doing the design work initially in 2000 to now we're here in 2006 than is normal. So I think that there's probably the strict legal interpretation of who, what. I think, as I said, it's more of an expectation that once we get to this point. Also, there's the consideration that a prime bidder for the existing facility might be the city of Mankato, and this would de facto apply in part towards their purchase price, too.
And if I might, what do you think the value of the current site is?
Madam Chair, the appraisal we did in 2003 was $3.3 million.
And so are you saying that the project costs are actually more in the neighborhood of $21 million and you need $18 million to... But where's that $3 million going to go that you get from Mankato if you vacate this site?
Madam Chair, Mankato is currently in negotiations with the district for additional back and forth over what it's going to be. But it's a variety of items that will be done, and not necessarily to the facility.
Madam Chair, if I might, the cost of the project is the $18.2 million. The approximately $3 million appraised value, an appraisal is only good until you get the final market offer, but that's our guesstimate. We're working with the city of Mankato for in-kind as well as outright cash transfers, but some of the things that they might do include doing trunk highway work for us on their dime, for local projects as well. So there's some consideration over and above the $900,000 that would come to pass if indeed they're the highest bidder for the facility. So at this point in time, any monies that we get outright cash proceeds, like the sale of the Jordan truck station or other right-of-way or building infrastructure, would be deposited to the trunk highway fund.
All right, thank you. Any additional questions on the facilities? Mr. Gray, Yeah, are you complete with that?
That's our presentation today, and I will give you some information on the Department Administration request for trunk highway bonds to support the facade, fixing the facade.
We appreciate that. If we just have it by Thursday, yep. We can put it in the members' packets on Thursday. Any additional questions? All right. We've got ourselves into a little bit of a problem for Thursday. We wanted to hear the transit projects, and we know that it'll take quite some time, and we'd likely have to reconvene later on in the afternoon or early evening. But at this time, the only rooms that are available are on the 3rd, 4th, or 5th floor, and the thought of having a Central Corridor North Star hearing in 500 South or 400 North is probably a little more than I want to tackle. I think it would be very uncomfortable for the public. Representative Abrams?
Well, Madam Chair, the House does control some space in the Capitol that there are bigger rooms.
And we can look into that, but we're also toying with the idea, and we're also trying to get by audio and or video representatives from the FTA to discuss those projects with us as well. And so we may push North Star and Central till next Tuesday. We'll have an announcement out by noon tomorrow. We're trying to work this out, but we will try and avoid having North Star Central Corridor hearings in a teeny tiny hearing room because we just don't think that would be good for anybody.
Madam Chair.
Representative Abrams.
Madam Chair, is the process going to be similar to last year in which the committee is not given a target? We fill out worksheets. They get aggregated and sent to the Capital Investment Committee, never to be seen again. Is that basically the process?
Representative Abrams, that was my intent, to just do the worksheet.
I'm not being critical of you. I just find it rather strange that we would put in all the time and effort to try to understand this and some of the operational costs that we're going to be looked at funding in the future for some of these things. And then basically we're not given a real target, and then our work can either be accepted or ignored.
President Abrams, I don't agree with your assessment of what happens once we make our recommendations, but absent a better process, this way, the way I figure it is, by filling out the worksheet, all 10 of us get an equal say. We show that spreadsheet of where the votes and numbers lie, and we have major problems with what we are incurring in investments and operating costs into the future with no apparent way to pay for them, but we haven't been able to address that.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't mean to speak for Representative Leader, but there are probably two votes on this committee to reconstitute an appropriation committee so that the division actually makes the decisions and that the chair of the Appropriations Committee carries a capital investment bill that the members of the division that's responsible for funding the operating costs actually put together.
Representative Leader, sounds like Representative Abrams, we have some work for you to do. Any additional questions or comments? Again, members, look for an announcement on Tuesday or on Thursday's meeting by noon tomorrow when we get all the pieces put together as far as what our options are. But we may be meeting into the early evening on Thursday if we can't get this all worked out. So, thank you. Meeting adjourned.